At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I'm Tony Bruschi, and today we dive headfirst into one of the most disturbing cases to hit the courtroom in recent years, the Sarah Boone suitcase murder trial. Boone stands accused of zipping her boyfriend, Jorge Torres Jr., into a suitcase, leaving him to suffocate inside their shared apartment in Orlando, Florida. What started as an alleged game of hide-and-seek ended in tragedy, and now the courtroom must uncover whether this was a reckless accident or something far more sinister. In the chilling video recovered from Boone's phone, Torres's pleas for air are met with laughter and mocking words. It raises the question, what drives someone to mock a person's desperation? Was Boone's behavior shaped by years of trauma, as her defense claims, or was it the final deliberate act of cruelty in a toxic relationship? This trial reveals more than a tragic death. It unearths complex dynamics of abuse, alcohol-fueled rage, and fractured emotions. Through the evidence, testimonies, and disturbing recordings, we'll explore the fine line between self-defense and murder. It's a case that will leave you questioning, can a person really be both victim and villain? The trial opens with prosecutors laying out the shocking details that brought Sarah Boone to face a second-degree murder charge. The jury is immediately immersed in the most compelling piece of evidence, a haunting 11-minute video. In the video, Jorge Torres Jr. is confined inside a suitcase, gasping for air, desperately repeating, "I can't breathe." Boone's voice cuts through the recording, not with concern, but laughter. "That's what you get for choking me," she mocks, leaving no room for ambiguity about her intentions. The prosecution argues that this isn't a case of an accident gone wrong. It's about a choice made in cold blood. Medical experts testify, painting a grim picture of how Torres died. The autopsy reveals that he was folded into a fetal position for 11 excruciating hours, deprived of oxygen and unable to adjust his body. The bruises on his head, back, and limbs suggest that there was more to the story, injuries possibly caused before or during his confinement. His blood alcohol level, found to be 3 times the legal limit, seals the notion that he was in no condition to escape. The prosecution emphasizes these details, stating that Boone knew Torres could not free himself, yet she chose to leave him there. Boone's defense takes a different route, claiming this tragedy was the product of a toxic relationship fueled by years of emotional turmoil and heavy drinking. Her attorney, James Owens, tells the court that both Boone and Torres were deeply intoxicated the night he died. He frames the couple's interaction as an ill-conceived game of hide-and-seek, spiraling out of control when Boone fell asleep. However, the prosecution challenges this version, pointing to the video where Boone is not only fully aware of Torres's distress, but mocks it. As law enforcement officers take the stand, the jury is given insight into Boone's demeanor when first responders arrived. Police body cam footage shows Boone speaking calmly, almost casually, about the night's events. "We were playing hide and seek," she told officers, as if trying to downplay the horror of the situation. The prosecution hammers this point. Her lack of visible panic, her conflicting statements, and the eerie absence of remorse cast doubt on the narrative of an innocent mistake. The testimony of neighbors brings new tension to the courtroom. One neighbor describes hearing something heavy tumbling down the stairs, likely the suitcase carrying Torres on the night he died. Another testifies that Boone and Torres's relationship was characterized by loud arguments and frequent intoxication, providing the jury with a glimpse of the instability that marked their lives together. With these facts laid bare, the defense attempts to invoke battered spouse syndrome, arguing that Boone acted out of years of emotional and psychological abuse. Judge Michael Kranick allows the defense to proceed with this strategy, but reminds the jury that the defense must establish an immediate threat that justified Boone's actions that night. The prosecution is quick to point out the flaw in this argument. Torres was zipped inside a suitcase, no longer posing a physical threat, and still, Boone let him suffer. The courtroom listens intently as the medical examiner addresses one final detail, the broken zipper. The defense suggests that it might have provided some airflow, offering Torres a chance to survive. But the examiner shuts down this argument, explaining that the compressed position of Torres's body made it impossible for him to breathe, regardless of the airflow. His death, they assert, was slow and inevitable. With the prosecution building a narrative of malice and the defense clinging to the trauma of an abusive relationship, the trial has reached a boiling point. As more evidence unfolds, it becomes clear that the line between victim and villain isn't as clear-cut as either side would like to believe. As the trial progresses, more details emerge about the complicated relationship between Sarah Boone and Jorge Torres Jr. Law enforcement officers testify about previous domestic disturbance calls to the couple's apartment, though none resulted in formal charges or arrests. Boone's defense references these incidents as evidence of an ongoing toxic relationship, framing her actions within the context of emotional and psychological abuse. Boone's legal struggles leading up to the trial become part of the case's narrative. She cycled through multiple attorneys during the 4 years before trial, with several stepping down or being dismissed. At one point, Boone was forced to represent herself after a judge ruled she had forfeited her right to legal counsel due to conflicts with her attorneys. This pattern, the defense argues, reflects Boone's mental state, overwhelmed by trauma and instability. The prosecution, however, presents these legal disputes as a sign of Boone's manipulative tendencies rather than emotional distress. The defense introduces battered spouse syndrome as part of their strategy, arguing that Boone's actions were a response to years of manipulation and emotional trauma from Torres. They suggest that trauma can impair judgment and cause victims to act in irrational ways. However, Judge Michael Kranick reminds the jury that this defense hinges on the presence of an immediate threat, which must be clearly established for the argument to hold. The prosecution challenges this point, stating that Torres, confined inside the suitcase, posed no direct danger to Boone. The courtroom also hears about alcohol's role in Boone and Torres's relationship. Witnesses describe both as frequently intoxicated, with arguments often escalating under the influence. A neighbor testifies that on the night of February 23, 2020, loud noises were heard from the couple's apartment, including what may have been something heavy falling down the stairs, possibly the suitcase containing Torres. This testimony adds further complexity to the jury's understanding of the night's events. Family members of Torres take the stand, disputing Boone's portrayal of him as an abuser. Torres's brother acknowledges that Jorge struggled with alcohol, but denies knowledge of any consistent physical abuse. The brother's testimony casts doubt on the defense's narrative, leaving the jury to assess conflicting perspectives on the couple's history. The medical examiner testifies about Torres's injuries, emphasizing that his bruises were consistent with blunt force trauma, but not necessarily fatal on their own. What ultimately killed him, the examiner explains, was positional asphyxia, a slow death caused by his body's inability to expand enough to draw in air. The prosecution emphasizes that Torres was trapped for 11 hours inside the suitcase, with his cries for help captured on video, further contradicting Boone's claims that it was all just a game. As the courtroom absorbs these testimonies and arguments, the question remains, was Sarah Boone acting out of fear, or did she deliberately leave Torres to die? Both sides prepare for closing arguments, hoping to sway the jury toward their version of the truth. After following every piece of evidence and testimony in this trial, the story of Sarah Boone feels like a tangled knot of trauma, dysfunction, and emotional immaturity. But beyond the obvious layers of alcohol dependency and toxic relationship dynamics, there's something striking about Boone's behavior, something almost childlike in the way she engages with the world around her. From her playful excuse of hide and seek to shifting blame at every opportunity, Boone's actions raise deeper questions. Is she even capable of understanding accountability, or does she exist in a world where consequences are always someone else's fault? Throughout the trial, her behavior has been puzzling. Boone moved from attorney to attorney, 8 in total, discarding each one along the way, frustrated that none could represent her correctly. At one point, she even represented herself as if the entire legal process were just another obstacle to navigate, not a serious life or death matter. Her request to the judge for snacks during hearings and casual attitude in court suggest a disconnect from the gravity of the situation. The question is, does Sarah Boone truly grasp what she's done? Or like a child who breaks a toy, is she struggling to comprehend why everyone around her is so upset? The video evidence offers a chilling glimpse into this pattern. Jorge Torres Jr. begs for his life, saying, "I can't breathe." Boone, instead of helping, laughs and mocks him, dismissing his cries with the cold detachment of someone playing a game. When police arrive the next morning, her story is flat and detached. "We were playing hide and seek, and I forgot." It's the kind of excuse you'd expect from a child caught sneaking a cookie, not from someone whose actions led to a man's death. Her words and tone lack any real sense of remorse or empathy, leaving the jury to wonder, was she simply incapable of feeling it? Psychological experts suggested battered spouse syndrome as an explanation for Boone's behavior, but the prosecution pushes back hard. They argue that even if the relationship was toxic, Torres posed no immediate threat while trapped inside the suitcase. The defense tried to frame Boone as someone acting out of fear, but the prosecution's case hinges on the idea that Boone wasn't afraid. She was in control, reveling in the power she had in that moment. As the trial progressed, it became clear that Boone's relationships weren't just toxic. They were a symptom of deeper psychological dysfunction. Boone seems to repeatedly make poor choices in relationships and life decisions, cycling through unhealthy dynamics without ever recognizing her own role in the chaos. Whether it's her turbulent relationship with Torres or her conflicts with nearly every attorney she hired, Boone's actions reveal a pattern. Always thinking she's right, never taking responsibility, and leaving a trail of wreckage in her wake. There's a hint here that some form of personality disorder may be at play, driving her toward destructive relationships and poor decisions, all while insulating her from the concept of accountability. This leads to an uncomfortable but necessary question. Is Sarah Boone even capable of true accountability or empathy? Or does she operate in a world where everything is transactional, where consequences are temporary inconveniences to be managed, not lessons to be learned? The video of Torres trapped in the suitcase pleading for breath is the clearest evidence of this disconnect, a moment where empathy should have compelled action, yet all Boone gave was indifference. What makes this case so unsettling isn't just the crime, it's the psychology behind it. Boone's behavior reflects a person who navigates life like a series of games, where shifting blame and avoiding consequences are the ultimate goals. But this time, the game ended in tragedy. Whether her actions were the result of trauma, emotional immaturity, or something more pathological, the jury's job is to decide if Sarah Boone's choices amount to second-degree murder, an unlawful killing fueled by anger and detachment, or a tragic mistake by someone incapable of rational judgment. In the end, this trial forces us to confront an uncomfortable truth. Can a person be both victim and villain at once? And if so, how do we hold them accountable when they may not even understand what accountability means?
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.